Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the Brotherly Glove Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle, alongside my brother, Johnny, two brothers from Philly, talking all things Philly sports in an intelligent way to talk about Philly sports. We've been through it all. We've seen it all, the ups and downs, the ebbs and flows, the Hall of Famers to the guys who we'd rather not remember played for our city. We've watched it all up close, and of course, we've covered it all 30 years combined in sports media. In today's episode, the great Adnan Virk joins us. He'll give us any thoughts he has on that stinker of a Super Bowl and whether the Eagles could have done what we saw last night. Then we'll talk hockey. What's going on with the Fly Guys? And, of course, what we should keep an eye on when it comes to the Olympics. Olympic hockey is here, folks. Maybe we'll get a little thoughts on Blue Jays, Phillies. He's got some Philly ties, of course. Ties to the great up north. Johnny, exciting time, not only to be a Philly fan, as always, to be a sports fan. So many things happening, and we have a great guest who knows how to talk about it all coming up.
That's right. Let's get him in.
Let's do it. Well, like I mentioned, a great guest, host of Amazon Prime Monday Night Hockey, a host on NHL Network, the co-host of NHL Unscripted, Virk and Demers podcast. He's also an Emmy Award-winning host on MLB Tonight on MLB Network, and perhaps most impressively, he is a best-selling author of the book Cinephile, which is available wherever books are sold. Finally, joining us, the great Adnan Virk. Adnan, welcome to the show, my friend. How are you?
Listen, fantastic introduction, Kyle. Much appreciated. Just to make it easy for people, when I say fish, that means I'm referring to my dear friend, John Fisher. If I say Kyle, I'm referring to you. Otherwise, if I say fish, you're not sure which fish I'm talking about. Yeah. First, if I want my boy Fish, he came correct. He reached out to me. I said, of course, I'd love to come on. And I'm having a little sabbatical from Amazon Prime because the Olympics right now. Normally, Mondays, I'd be in Winnipeg or Edmonton or Toronto or wherever it may be. One Flyers game, which was awesome. But I love the fact Fish has got the Cinephile book available wherever books are sold and the Emmy Award, which is one of the last few times we get to hang out and have a great time together. So congrats on the pod. Thrilled to talk all things Philly. It's a question I'm often asked. I'm often mistaken for being a Philly guy because of my passion for the Eagles and Flyers. Recently, there was a host behind MLB Network came in and was like, oh, what part of Philly are you from? I said, I'm not. Like, what? How the hell could you be an Eagles and a Flyers fan? That makes no sense. And you're Canadian. I said, well, I root for Team Canada, of course. I root for the Blue Jays. I root for the Raptors. But I said the Eagles and Flyers have always been my jam. So I'm sure we'll get into that in other topics. But, yeah, stinker of a Super Bowl. Normally, Fish knows this about me. I don't like to get together to watch sporting events. I really like to hear the broadcasters. Like, I'm a real nerd for that. And to be honest, I'm such a Joe Buck fan. If it was Buck calling it, I probably would have just stayed home. Just, I love listening to Joe Buck. And nothing against Mike Tirico, who's a dear friend, obviously ESPN colleague, and Collinsworth. But I was like, you know what? I'm so disinterested in the Super Bowl. I hate the Patriots. Obviously, they've beaten our Eagles, and I just couldn't care less about the Seahawks. So I actually went to a friend's house, and it was a good time. I never do that Super Bowl party thing, but I'm like, you know what? Considering how bad the game was, this was a good decision. Good pizza, some good Pepsi, ice cream, some tea. The kids had a great time running around, and I didn't really hear much of what Mike and Chris were saying. It was fine. Didn't really watch the halftime show. Nothing against Bad Bunny. Certainly not a political take, but I watched it this morning, actually, just to catch up. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know what he's saying. He seems like he's having a good time. Right. Lady Gaga showed up. Ricky Martin didn't piss off ice. Okay, that's good. Everything moves on. But it was probably one of the more disappointing Super Bowls in recent memory, fellas, especially for us last year. And I will always say it was 40-6. The hell with Andy Reid and those two garbage time touchdowns. It will always piss me off. The Patrick Mahomes goes, well, I threw three touchdowns. I'm like, no, you didn't. You threw two garbage time touchdowns when we took our starters out. It was 40-6. We kicked your ass. And this Super Bowl wasn't nearly as exciting.
I have to remind myself what the final score was because, you know, Kyle and I were there, and it never felt like it was less than 20 points. So, we're in total agreement there.
As we were leaving the stadium, Johnny said to me, like, I hope the talking point people remember the 40-6 more than they do the final score, because that was an absolute dismantling of the Chiefs.
Yeah, our man Saquon Barkley put it best when he said, playoffs on, we were belt to ass, which is one of the funnier expressions I've heard and I used in vernacular, but it is completely accurate. I wish it had been the same this year. I still saw, I was watching Get Up this morning. I was at the gym. They had it on. Eagles' fourth best odds to win the Super Bowl next year. So I do love that about our guys. We have a great season, incredible season, season for the ages. Then we have a disappointing season. Well, we still win the division, 11-6, et cetera, lose to the Niners, a game we should have won. But everyone's like, nope, Eagles are still a good team. So I love our fan base. I love our team. No matter what, we're a top five team in football, whoever you talk to.
Yeah, there's still so much talent. I think the biggest thing is we've had the coordinator stuff, and Stoutland is retiring. Yeah. I still think it all hinges on Lane Johnson and whether he comes back.
Big time.
And if he does, how how healthy he can stay all year. Like that, to me, that's the biggest piece for them. We know there's talent. We know that AJ Brown, there's a question if whether he wants to be back or they can move him or it makes sense to move him and find another way. But I still think it's all about Lane.
Yeah, that's a great point. Our buddy Aaron Boone was on a podcast with John Heyman and Joel Sherman. At the end, John Heyman's like, I know you're an Eagles fan. Like, what happened? Like, I don't understand. You guys won a Super Bowl and you won a division. Like, what happened? And then I saw, he's like, your coach was running down the field to get AJ Brown. And Boone's like, well, what happened there was, I think he was just trying to get AJ off the field. So he was running. It wasn't a confrontation. He was just running down like, hey, get off the field. We don't want to lose a play. And he's like, yeah, AJ can be a little bit difficult. But as Boone said, it's hard to repeat. And his first thought, same as you, Finch, and I feel the same way. He goes, the line just wasn't the same. Like, they were just banged up. And Lane Johnson is so indispensable. I know we're making him sound like he's Tony Boselli, but I'm like, this guy is so valuable. Once he was out of that lineup, you go, Fred Johnson, you see a couple holding penalties. The run game wasn't the same. You know, I think Mailata had a bit of an offseason. You know, I think Dickerson wasn't as good, wasn't as healthy. Juergens was our only Pro Bowler on offense, which is insane. But a year ago, like, it's all started with, like, that line was impregnable. Like, they would just push, and that's it. Saquon would find holes. He was amazing. If you don't have a great line, leads to breakdowns and protection. As you said, I don't think they run it back, nor would I. I think you look around for an AJ trade. It's not one of those, like, where you have to trade him. Like, obviously, he's a great receiver. He's still at a 1,000-yard year. But if he's that unhappy or just feels like it's that much of a disconnection, then, yeah, you look for a move. But I love Devontae. Obviously, Goddard's really good. I think we all still believe in Jalen Hurts, even with some of the hiccups. And obviously, Saquon's still a stud. But I'm with you. It's offensive line. If Lane were to leave, along with Stout leaving, I certainly would have some questions there as far as our offensive line.
Yeah, that's a big piece. Well, as we're talking this, I think you agree there's not a whole lot to say about yesterday. You hit on it. And I think I want to hear it, and I think it'll help people listening. Why people think you're a Philly guy? You're a Flyers fan and an Eagles fan.
Right.
So, you know, you work in hockey. You grew up in and around Toronto. So, I know the answer here, but in the spirit of the Brotherly Glove podcast, tell us, as a kid growing up around Toronto, how you became a Flyers fan.
Yeah, since you know the answer, this is why we're hinging on the Brotherly Glove part, because it's absolutely hilarious. Our friend Greg Colley used to always be amazed. He's like, so you hate your brother? You're being a Flyers fan? I said, no. Growing up, I was just born in Toronto. Then I grew up in a small town called Kingston, a few hours away. And it's between Toronto and Montreal. So one of my best friends from growing up is a huge Montreal Canadiens fan. And I always felt like not everyone was a Leafs fan. Most were. I mean, obviously. But I do find that something very specific. Malcolm Gladwell once said this, the Canadian author. Of course, he's written Blink and The Tipping Point, all those books. He said one biggest difference between Canadians and Americans, Malcolm Gladwell's from Toronto as well. He went to U of T. He said is that, like, Americans are so passionate about their colleges and where they're from. And wherever area you are, you generally root for that team. Which is why I was so glad, Fish, we worked with a guy named Tom Roach. Roach, he's a great producer at ESPN, who is a Yankees fan, even though he's from Massachusetts. I'm like, okay, great. So finally a kinship somebody can appreciate. How can you be from somewhere and not be a fan of that team? So the answer is, my brother grew up an Oilers fan because he was a front runner. So naturally, he's too smart to cheer for the Leafs. The Oilers are a juggernaut. And being brothers, I just cheered against him. So in 85, I was 7 years old. It was Oilers, Flyers in the final. I'm like, well, I'll be a Flyers fan. And obviously, the Flyers lost in 5 games. And then I remember Pelly Lindbergh was a stud. And then I remember when he died. I remember him dying more than him playing, which is a horrible thing to say, but it's true. And I asked my dad, because I was watching the news the next day, and they said, Pelly Lindbergh, his brain was like a vegetable. And I didn't understand what that meant. I was like, I was so confused. I'm like, what do you mean? Like it looks like a rhubarb? Like, I don't get it. I just see the images of, like, a Lamborghini. I'm like, oh, my God. But 87 was, like, a really pure memory. Like, 87, I could recite you statistics, and because I was 9 years old at that point. And that was – I still have the VHS tape, which is called Blood, Sweat, and Cheers, the 86-87 Philadelphia Flyers story. And it was heartbreaking. I remember we lost in 7, obviously. J.J. Daniel, the great game winner in Game 6. And then Philly lost in Game 7. Hextall forever, my favorite Flyer, favorite athlete. And I remember the next day crying, and my dad was like, what's wrong? And I said, you know, we're a very religious family. I said, you know, I prayed. You told me to pray, Dad. I prayed. Flyers didn't win. Oilers won again. This is the second time this happened. I understand. My prayers were unanswered. And he's like, your prayers will be answered one day. It just has to be the right time. And here we are in 2026. The Flyers, after a 3-win-15-game stretch, appear no closer to the Stanley Cup or the playoffs after a 5-year absence. But one day when it happened, it'll be great. Thank God the Eagles have won, so we can all celebrate that. I adopted the Eagles in 1990, and that reason was, I was like, well, I'm already a Flyers fan, so I might as well get another Philly team. And I loved Cunningham, and of course, I love those great Eagles defenses, those Buddy Ryan defenses, Reggie White, and, you know, Seth Joyner was so great, Eric Allen and Clyde Simmons, all the rest of it. So, yeah, it's a funny story to this day, but now it's perfect. Living in North Jersey, I'm only an hour 40 away. So, yeah, growing up, I never got to see the Flyers. It was like one game a year. Again, it was a 3-hour drive. My dad was going to take me. I went to school in downtown Toronto, so I remember getting tickets to Maple Leaf Gardens. It was a 10-minute walk, the purple seats. It was like $45. It was great. And the one game a year, I go watch Leafs Flyers, and my buddies would laugh. They go, "God, he takes it so personal." Like, when the Leafs like won, I was so angry. Like, man, like this guy really, he really bleeds black and orange here. Like, we're just trying to have a good hockey game out here. But yeah, fond memories of being a Flyers fan growing up in Canada. And to this day, it remains very amusing to people. But all the way, and this year, like I said, being so close, Amazon, we had a Flyers game there. I dragged my kids, and the Amazon crew's laughing. Like, what? Your dad took you to school for this? I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, hopefully one day they'll appreciate this. Like, yeah. In the moment now, fellas are like, God, this boarding skate's pretty brutal. Like, we just sit here and watch these guys skate around for 40 minutes. Then we waited 20 minutes for Travis Konecny to walk out for 10 seconds just to say, hi, Dad. Hey, can you sign my son Shaz's jersey? Thanks. Quick picture. Enjoy the game tonight. And then maybe 2 minutes with Rick Tockett, who was great. I was like, oh, Tox from Scarborough. He's like, are you guys from Scarborough? I'm like, no, my cousins grew up in Scarborough. My parents are in Maple. Well, okay, great. He was really nice to my son, Yusuf. And they're like, that's it. And they're like, Dad, this is like an hour of our time. I'm like, well, listen, I'm trying to take you behind the scenes. You know, you get to go to the locker room, see what it smells like. Get to, like, Dan Vladar winked at you at one point. That was kind of cool, right? All they cared about was the actual game, which thank God we won, which was a nice win for us. But it's funny. I've pointed that I'm indoctrinated them. Kyle, I don't know if you have kids. I know Fish has two boys. I Bill Simmons, I believe, years ago said there's no greater failure of a parent if they don't adopt your teams. So my friends find it so funny. They're like, your kids are growing up in Jersey. I'm like, yep. Like, your son should be a Devils fan. I go, no, Flyers. I go, come on. There's no chance here. I'm losing the battle on New York teams, I'll be honest. They're more going Yankees, Knicks. But that's okay. Flyers and Eagles, this house is being dominated by Philadelphia.
That's great.
There you go. Yeah, and my son is 18, soon to be 19. He was born in 2007, and his name is Chase Ryan. So he didn't really have a choice.
Chase Utley and Ryan Howard all the way. It's funny. So people say, well, do you hate the Phillies? I say, well, no, 93, obviously, we got the upper hand, Jays, Phillies. But what I love about Philadelphia is just the passion of the sports fans no matter what. And the Phillies, I'm not antagonistic against them because it's not in the division. I think Fish and I have always said that about each other. Like, all right, AL East, NL East, we're not in competition. But I always feel for the – I love Ruben Amaro, who's a great guy, does an awesome job on Phillies broadcast. Yeah. We've had him with the MLB Network. But it's funny, this Chase Utley conversation, since you mentioned your son's name, seeing him in the Hall of Fame bout, there have been more than a few people. This will piss you guys off, but more than a few people, analysts I work with, are like, wow, Chase Utley pretty much jumped up there, huh? I'll tell you guys off air, but one analyst said to me, he's like, Chase Utley was never the best player on his team. And I was like, I don't know. He was pretty good. He goes, I'm telling you, I'm kind of tipping my hand now because he's a pitcher, but he goes, I never worried about facing him saying that's the best player on that team. He goes, that guy should not be in the Hall of Fame. I go, well, after the jump he had, maybe not next year, but in 2 years, Chase Utley is going to Cooperstown. So you can boo that day, but he's going to be there. Yeah. You guys will be thrilled.
You know what's cool, though? I really like that perspective, and I'm sure he's not a voter, but like that is really interesting to think, hey, when I face them and I was less worried about him than someone else on the team. And, I mean, just to say you're not the best player on a team can have two Hall of Famers. Like, that's, that's silly.
Kyle, you'll love this. There's a neighbor. I've kind of lost touch with him a little bit, but his son and my eldest son used to play basketball together, and he's just a diehard Sixers fan, which means he's just completely irrational. And much like my friend Michael Lombardi, we see the GM shuffle together. Mike is a huge Sixers fan as well. So we would obviously talk NFL on our podcast, and then we would talk a little bit of Sixers. So this guy, I would like send him back because he was just always crapping on Embiid. I would send it to Fish, and then Fish would respond. I'd send it back to this guy. They go back and forth. And Kyle, to summarize, the best point that your brother made was that, like, okay, I know he's not Moses Malone. Like, Moses Malone is one of one. Like, how many Moses Malones are there? Like, right. I'm not saying Embiid isn't flawed, but, like, this guy's killing him. And I'm like, he's like, well, he's no Moses Malone. I'm like, okay, fine. Well, I guess, whatever player you have. Chase Utley is no Mike Schmidt. Okay, I guess he's not a Hall of Famer, then. That's what we're going to do.
And we've spent 40 years without Moses Malone. It's been a rough run, you know? Yeah. All right. So let's you know all things hockey and Flyers. Let's talk a little bit about what's happening with the Flyers. Like, I don't want to go back too far, but
sure.
I guess what so you mentioned it five straight years missing the playoffs. That matches the longest streak in franchise history, which is wild to me. So this could be six and set the record. But what was the outlook entering the season? Like, is this true disappointment or are we kind of on the rise? Give us an idea, like, what you thought coming in, especially with some of the moves they made. We know Rick Tockett, they brought in some guys. You mentioned Dan Vladar. Like, they brought in some centers. You would – like, how they built it and what you thought coming in.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Let's go back just a little bit to Tortorella getting hired. You go, all right, Torts comes in year one. I'm like, oh, my God, he's on fire with these guys. He's intense. And the Flyers were playing above their weight. And for most of the year, we're a playoff team. And then down the stretch faded. So you go, oh, it's so frustrating. I was sitting a friend of mine. I go – I know the theory is either be a playoff team or stink because the draft pick, but I like the fact we're competitive, at least in the mix. The problem with Torts is, of course, he wears it as welcome. So then year two last year, the team really never got on their foot. And then towards the end, he seemed pretty frustrated. you know, was talking openly about his criticism of the team. They fire him. You go, okay, fine. I do think Torts is a good coach, and I think he got what he could out of them for a year. But after year two, he kind of wears his welcome. So you bring in Tak, who's an awesome guy. First of a five-year deal, well-respected coach, great assistant, obviously great player, and ties to Philadelphia as a wonderful player for so many years. So going into the season, I thought, okay, well, bubble team. Last year, they were a disappointment. And so this year, again, playing above their weight. For much of the year, they were a playoff team. In late December, they were second in the Metropolitan Division. I felt pretty confident. I go, this is a playoff team. And as far as the offseason moves you allude to, Fish, they've been great. Like Dan Vladar, save percentage around 9-10. It's been fantastic. He's always been kind of a 1A, 1B. He's not good enough to be a starter, but he's better than a backup. But the way the NHL is now, it's come so far from the years of Grant Fuhr playing 72 games a year. Now it's like you need to have two goalies. Even your best goalie isn't playing more than 50 games. So if Vladar can be 45 to 50 games, the other goalie's 35 to 40, we're good. The problem is Sam Harrison, who was a pleasant surprise a year ago, awful this year, like dreadful, like 860 save percentage. So the schedule is so condensed because the Olympics, Tocchet can't play Vladar back-to-back games. He rarely has. So it's Vladar, got to win that game, and then Harrison, you're probably going to lose. And then once in a while, you'll get a glimmer of hope. You go, wow, Flyers beat the Avalanche. They put up seven goals, and Harrison was fine. Like, he was pretty good. And my friend was like, well, they scored seven. How can you lose? I said, well, he could have given up eight. It's against the Avalanche. Harrison's been so bad this year. He was good. But then he'll look terrible in a game in which he doesn't get much action. So the good pickup of Vladar has been mitigated by the fact Harrison's taken a huge step back. You mentioned some of the other signs. Christian Dvorak, good signing. 1 year, $5.8 million. Chris Pronger, all-time great Flyer, just because the one season, 2010, took us to the promised land. The next year, only played 50 games. Next year, for that 13 games, he was done. But Prong said to me earlier in the year, because we worked together on Amazon Prime, and he said, Dvorak's interesting. 1 year, $5.8 million deal, bit of an overpay. But just see how the season goes. If you're not doing well, you can trade him. So this really pisses off my friend Zach, who I went to the Flyers game last week to watch the Kings. He goes, but this is a classic Flyers move. Dvorak should not have been signed. He's having a good year, but the team stinks, so flip him. Instead, they give him a five-year deal. And I said, right. Yeah, but he's having a good year. He goes, but this is the problem. You give a guy who's good. He's not great. He's good, but he's having a good year. Now you just give him a five-year deal. So now for 2 years, he might be good. 3 years, he might stink. Now you're hamstring $5 million. And I said, well, I prefer to look at it as Danny Breer saying, this guy's good. Clearly, he likes talking. The system's working out. Which brings us to Matvei Michkov. So Michkov, with great effort by Danny Breer. I mean, I tried to get Danny to tell me. Ruben Amar had a golf tournament last year, and I got to meet Breer. So I was like, Michkov, what's happening? This was before actually he'd been signed. So this was 2 years ago. He's like, well, I'm doing my best. Like, well, you know, how's it looking? He was like, listen, he goes, you don't want to know how tough it is to get these guys out of Russia. He's like, I can't even get into the detail how tough it is. He's like, but he's going to be in Philadelphia at some point. I'm like, okay. So last year was a pleasant surprise. He was here. I'm like, all right. And for much of the year, I thought he should have been up for the Calder. He finished fourth in rookie of the year bowling, 66 points. Like I said, I just went to the Flyers game a week and a half ago. They met him Michkov jerseys. I'm like, oh, the Flyers fan base is in. Like, oh, we got a young stud. This guy could be our guy. Yeah. So what's happened this year? He shows up to camp out of shape. Tocchet doesn't appear to be a fan of his. As Prong said to me, because you kind of feel this one coming. Young guy, out of shape. Tocchet kind of no nonsense. He's Russian. Like, here we go. So they don't get off on the right foot. He's basically playing third line minutes. And at that Flyers-Kings game I was at, in which we lost in overtime, my buddy Zach turns to me. He goes, Michkov's played maybe like 13 minutes. This is brutal. Like, he's supposed to be one of our young stars. So then Tocchet came out at Fan Fest like a week ago and said, well, listen, he came to camp out of shape. He's learning the game. It is what it is. The Amazon game we were at late December, while he was talking to the media, at one point, Tak goes, guys, I'm getting sick and tired of the Michkov questions. This is the sixth time you guys have asked the same question. He's working on his defense. He's learning the game. We'll get to where we are. When he talked to Amazon people privately, the first thing I said to him was like, oh, Tak, way to handle the Michkov question. He kind of smiled, rolls his eyes, goes, oh, man, these guys are the Michkov. So, like, he's tired of talking about it. Now, he's been criticized because last week he made that comment about saying, oh, he showed up to camp out of shape. Immediately, Danny Breer came out and said, Michkov's not going anywhere. Like, this guy's a part of our foundation. He's not going anywhere. Keith Jones comes out. Michkov is a key part of our future, period. Like, figure it out. So this is just a guess. I'm sure they pulled aside Mr. Rick Tocchet and said, we gave you a five-year deal. We're giving you $5 million a year. We pay you a lot of money. It's a good deal. Team's probably not going to make the playoffs. Michkov's not going anywhere. We had to fight tooth and nail to get this guy to Russia. We think he's a stud. Now, did he show up out of shape? Sure.
Yeah.
It's also 5 months ago. Like, I don't know why Tak's bringing it up now. And I'm team talking. He was great to the Verk boys, but I wouldn't have brought it up now. I think, in fairness to Rick, he's pissed off. He's frustrated. He gets asked the same goddamn questions. Like, okay, fine, guys. He was out of shape. What do we want me to tell you? So my guess is Tak will now, because it's going to be tough for us to make the playoffs. I think I'll actually play Michkov a little more. I don't know if it's a directive from his bosses, but it's like, okay, fine. I'll give him a little rope. Flyers fans love this kid. You want to see what he can do? Oh, if he's a -4, well, that's on you. Then I'll do what I got to do. But I think that's been a part of it. Connecting, I love, obviously, aside from the fact he was great to Shaz. He's a great player, a good year. The other one, which is interesting, is Zegras. So Zegras gets acquired, a great offseason move. Now, a few guys, again, I'll tell you off air, but they're like, not crazy about him, kind of a floater. Like, he's an atypical flyer. He's not like a tough, hard-nosed Keith Jones, Eric Lindros, et cetera. Like, he's kind of a you-know-what. And I was like, all right, well, whatever. As long as he scores, I don't give a crap. We haven't made the playoffs in 5 years. So Zegras is lighting it up. I go, this guy's awesome. I go, he's a point-of-game player. Let's go. And I asked one of our NHL insiders, I go, what's it going to take to sign him? He's a free agent after this year. Clearly, the Flyers are going to sign this guy. I said, 7 years, 50. And then Jason Demers, we do the podcast, was like, what are you joking? I go, I don't know. He goes, bro, he's getting $10 million a year. I was like, just hold the phone. He had a good rookie season, disappointed for a couple of years, now really good with Philly. That's $10 million a year. He's like, yeah. I'm like, he's a good young player. I go, okay, fine, whatever. He's been playing for forever. Now, here's the problem. Zegras has slowed down, looked like an all star the last 15 games. He's been really quiet, maybe 3 goals for the last 15 games. Another dilemma for Philly. Do you sign Zegras? Do you give him that $70 million? Go, this is our guy? Or could he be a disappointment as they've been burned in the past? My hunch is they'll pay, maybe overpay a little bit because he has been really good and they'll hope that this was a speed bump. But long-winded answer to your question, Fish, expectations. I thought they'd be a playoff team. They're not going to be a playoff team in all likelihood. It's disappointing. As you said, 6 years will set the record. You got to hope this offseason they just do something. This fan base is so great. They're so passionate, but there's only so much they can take. I mean, we were at a Saturday 12:30 game, and it's pretty much sold out. I go, like, people got things to do. It's cold. It's outside. It's freezing. But they support their Flyers no matter what. So I would just hope whoever the free agents are, whatever they can do this offseason, try to make some more moves because it's frustrating the way the season's gone. They look so good. And then once the wheels fell off, and that was actually the strength of this team, they never lost two straight games for 2 months. And then all of a sudden, there was a six-game winless skid. Now they're done. Can't recover.
Yeah. Yeah, and it seems. I think you mentioned it. They do have some potential foundation pieces there.
Yeah.
And yeah, we talked about Moses Malone. I mean, I feel like we're on year 40 of trying to find the goalie, right?
Well, that's the craziest thing. I'm like, when you think about the amount of goalies that I've seen, I'm like, Robert Ash and John Van Beesbrook and Roman Čechmánek, like, it's nuts. Yep. Roman Čechmánek, they used to nickname him the bipolar goaler. And he was so hated, like, in the morning, like, before the game, they'd shoot pucks in his head. Like, it was crazy. I couldn't stand this guy. And, like, they made so many miscalculations. Like, I remember the Van Beesbrick, they could have had Curtis Joseph, but they went with Beezer, and he was good, but not great. And then, of course, he loses in the playoffs. Like, oh, here we go again. It's like, and I honestly, back to your overarching point of the Flyers the last 6 years, I really thought Carter Hart was the guy. I was like, we finally got a goalie. Hextall drafted him. Like, oh, he's a stud. Like, he had like a 9-10 save percentage rookie season. I'm like, here we go. And then, unfortunately, what happens, the off the field, off the ice issues, part of the sexual assault case, he was cleared, but Billy doesn't bring it back. By the way, try and explain to a 9-year-old son what happened to Carter Hart. Shad's like, what happened? I go, well, he took some time off. What, is he hurt? Yeah, I just had to go away. Yeah. Oh, he's back now? Yeah, he's in Vegas. They didn't want to get him. No, they didn't want to get him. And my friend Zach, by the way, highly amused by this. To the Flyers even went last year, I wore my Carter Hart jersey. He's like, are you kidding? I go, why? Like, he wasn't accused of sexual assault. I go, another guy was. He was a part of six. I go, not to go into details, but I can't wear a jersey. He didn't kill anybody. He goes, did anyone say anything? I go, one guy, while taking a lineup for the piss, goes, Carter Hart, huh? I go, yeah, I thought he was going to be the next Flyer goalie. I bought the jersey. I'm still wearing the jersey. Because what I heard is, like, he acted the way an 18-year-old is. Like, he should have done something, but he didn't do anything. And I was like, hey, man, I'm not judging dudes here. I'm just wearing a jersey. Okay, I paid $200 for this jersey. I went back to the store to try to return it. They're like, Carter Hart, 79. Right. They go, we can maybe give you $25. And I give it a long look, and I go, get $25 back. Or I can just wear it around the house. I'm like, I'll just wear it around the house. Look at the Carter Hart jersey upstairs. Right? Yeah, by the way, I went to the game last week. The guy was wearing a Carter Hart jersey. I'm like, hey, I like your jersey. He's like, thanks. Yeah. So that's a part of it, too. Foundational pieces. You think you finally have this goalie. He's 25 years old. In the next 10 years, it's Carter Hart. He's going to be our Hextall. No, he's gone. So that's part of it, too.
And it seems like they were right with Bobrovsky the way he's been, but it's working out in Philadelphia.
So I was about to mention.
God, I mean, the guy's a Vezina winner. At 36 now, he's finally slowing down, but that one's painful. Like, when I don't know about you guys. I think you guys are like that. I think I tend to root for the guy who had Philadelphia ties. So, like, when Bobrovsky was in his first cup, I'm like, oh, I hope he wins. He's a former Flyer. He was a good Flyer. It wasn't his fault to get traded. They gave up on him. But then, like, the more when he wins the second time, you go, oh my God, I can't believe we're going to have Bobrovsky. Right. Get some first winner. Like, now it's starting to piss me off. Like, don't be that good. Yeah. I felt the way about Andy Reid. When Andy Reid got the ring, I was like, oh, I'm really happy for Big Red. I think he was a great Eagles coach for years. The second time, I go, okay, seriously, Andy, you could have been better with the clock management. And all of a sudden, now you figured it out. And then now, and then, of course, we hate the Chiefs. It was so great to beat them last year. Again, I'll never forgive them for those garbage time touchdowns.
Yep.
So I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to say about them. I know that I think that coming into this season, like you said, the expectations were that they could be a playoff team. But, really light schedule early on, really struggled as of late. Forster missing the last 31 games. Is that a big difference to you, or is it just kind of happenstance that those two things kind of coincided?
No, that's a good point, Kyle. I hadn't thought about that. My buddy Zach was saying it to me. He really likes Forster a lot. Noah Cates. Like, it goes back to Fish's point. They do have these foundational pieces. Like, if you said, what's this Flyers team like in a couple of years? You'd go, well, I guess it's Konechny, it's Michkov, it's Forster, it's Cates. Sanheim I love on defense. He's going to play for Team Canada, and he's great. I think there was some debate whether I should make the team, but he was really good at Four Nations. I was talking to Prongs about it. He was like, no, I think he's a pretty good defenseman. He goes, and him and Cam York together is a pretty good combo. Ristolainen's an interesting guy because like they gave him that five-year contract like maybe 3 years ago now. And everyone's like, what a terrible deal. But like, that's a guy you could flip because like $5 million now for defenseman, he's not bad. He's not great. He's a depth guy, but you could trade him. The one that really pains me is the Jamie Drysdale Cutter Gauthier trade. Cutter Gauthier is an absolute stud, like great pick by the Flyers. I'm like, here we go. And all of a sudden, this prick comes out and goes, I don't want to play in Philadelphia. I'm like, what? So now they're totally screwed. And they go, all right, well, we'll trade for Jamie Drysdale. And Drysdale was a top five pick. I've seen enough hockey, fellas. That is never going to be a good trade for us. Like, Cutter Gauthier has 20 goals this year. He's going to be like a 40-goal scorer. Jamie Drysdale, on his best day, is a second-pair defenseman. Like, he's never going to be an all-star. He's a number three, number four. Like, he's fine. He's okay. He gets some power play minutes. It's all right. Like, Cutter Gauthier is a stud. I was like, I can't. I'm still so pissed when I see that. Like, if they had Cutter Gauthier, this is a playoff team. That would negate the loss of Tyson Forster for 30 games. So yep. Sometimes there's bad luck that hurts you as well.
Yeah, 25 goals already. You mentioned Sanheim on Team Canada. Are we anything you're looking like? Is there anything outside? Should we expect or maybe watch anything outside of a Team USA versus Team Canada gold medal match?
No, it's interesting. I think what ends up happening is that you think it's always Canada versus USA, and it should be at least on paper. Those are the two best teams. But I was talking to Mike Rupp. We were doing a show actually in Canada on Amazon Prime called Coast to Coast. And I always joke with Rupp. He's such a nice guy. I always think he's Canadian, but he is a proud American. And he looked at me at one point. He goes, got to be honest with you. I go, what? He goes, I don't feel good. I go, what do you mean? He goes, I got a bad feeling about USA. I'm like, what do you mean? I go, it's going to be Canada, USA. I go, Canada up front, unbelievable. And Prongs, again, made this point to me. He goes, who are the best players in the world? Like, Connor McDavid, Canadian. Macklin Celebrini, Canadian. Nathan MacKinnon, Canadian. Cale Makar, Canadian. He goes, so up front, we're going to score. Like, our forwards are awesome. Now, the USA's defense is outstanding. Zach Werenski in the Norris conversation. Quinn Hughes is an absolute stud. And at least in goaltending on paper, USA is better. Bennington's had a bad year for Canada. He was great at Four Nations. But Hellebuck's the reigning Hart Trophy Wesleyan winner. But Hellebuck's had an up-and-down year. He's been hurt. Ottinger can be inconsistent. Swayman, maybe. So USA, you thought goaltending a huge advantage. Like, maybe. Whereas Logan Thompson, I think, should be Canada's starting goaltender playing for the Capitals. Has had a great year. But I do think USA's defense is outstanding. Like, it's as good as defensive unit as you'll get. Lane Hutchinson, the Habs, has had a great year. Didn't make the team. Proud American. I'm like, listen, man. Team USA's defense, I think, is stacked. But Rupper, when he turned to me, I go, what's your issue with USA? He goes, I'm just telling you, when everyone thinks it's going to be Canada-USA, something will happen. I go, well, we've lost to Czechia the last 3 years, the World Juniors. That's annoying me to no end. He goes, well, maybe Czechia beats Canada. But he goes, I go, Czechia, Sweden, Finland. He goes, what are these teams? He goes, when everyone thinks it's Canada-USA, sometimes it goes the other way. So take that for what it will. I think it's Canada-USA. I think they're the two best teams, and it should be that. It should be a great final. And even my children, who are proud Americans, they're rooting for dad. They're like, we know how much this means to you. Like, on everything else, USA can kick Canada's ass. But if you can't lose in hockey, that's a tough time living here in North Jersey. So that's what I'm most looking forward to, the Olympics. But I got to be honest, fellas, I love the Winter Olympics. People ask me, like, I don't like the Summer Olympics at all. They go, why not? I go, because there's baseball on. Like, why would I want to watch swimming and gymnastics and track? Like, no, I want to watch baseball. So I get very annoyed with the Summer Olympics. I'm very antagonistic towards them. But I love the Winter Olympics. Because hockey's on pause. Midseason basketball is fine. Football is now over. So I'm like, hey, I'm all in on ski jumping. You want to give me a little figure skating? I'll watch a quad triple all day. Like a quad axle triple. Lots of, bro, they are flying through the sky in ski jumping and in figure skating. And ski jumping specifically, like, again, I'm watching it. My kid's like, you're riveted by this. I go, I DVR'd it. Like, I check. I went ski jumping. I'm like, 9 to 10 p.m. USA Network. Record women's ski jumping. The reason why is, I'm like, who came up with this idea? You go down a hill and just fly. And the guy was explaining. It was so funny. They did like a tutorial on ski jumping. This is my favorite part. In 1920, they have a black and white image. The guy looks like Tim Kirchner. They're like, you had your arms out like this, like a chipmunk. Then they were like, no, put your arms back. Then in 1956, they had the flying V, which has been adopted by everybody. Now that everyone goes flying V the whole way down. And this is easily the most lurid and disturbing story you're going to hear from the Olympics. The story is guys were injecting their penises So it's a little bit bigger, not for what you think, performance enhancing in the bedroom, but it would make the uniform a bit bigger because it wearing such a snug outfit and just a little bit more give in that area, a little more air and drag, and apparently help them to go further. I go, this is the wacky strip. So you're injecting your private part. I'm like, yep, a little more. Yep. So then when you size it, it's a little bit bigger. And then that air will help the resistance. Like, this is what they're doing when it comes to ski jumping. You think it doesn't matter? It matters for these fellas. They're doing everything they can to win that gold medal. Generally, Norway's really good. You know, Germany's always great in the luge, but those lugers, I mean, Germany also pretty good when it comes to ski jumping. So I watched the women's the other day. Norway won. They went 101 meters flying through the air. It's amazing. Imagine, like, you guys growing up were great baseball players. You played football, basketball, all sports, the Fishers. You know, we play different sports growing up in Canada. Again, those sports as well, we throw in hockey. Imagine growing up as a child, working on my ski jumping. What? Saturday at 6 a.m. I'm going to knock in a little ski jumping this morning, see how I do. It's a fascinating sport to me. I can't get enough of it.
That's great.
Yeah. There's so many things I watch in the Winter Olympics that I'm like, you could not have been a child the first time you tried this. It's too dangerous. What is, like, the skeleton thing where you're it's just one dude going down, somehow controlling a sled at 100 miles an hour? What is wrong with you?
I'm sure you guys have seen the video. David Vasse, the Dodgers reporter, who's a great guy. When he went down Bernie Brewer's slide, ended up, like, breaking his arm because he was going so fast. I have a friend who's done the bobsled. He's like, I'm not kidding. And he's not a scaredy cat. He's like, it is terrifying because you are flying down that thing. And your point, Kyle, the skeleton, that's even worse. I mean, luge, at least you're on the back. Skeleton, you're going head first flying down there. Like, they have some serious craziness, these people, man. It's a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah. You mentioned baseball season. Good segue. We'll get you out of here. You're a Blue Jays fan. You mentioned it before. What's right? Your mix of excitement for such a great run and disappointment for getting so close. That was the sixth time ever that the last game of the World Series went extra innings.
Yeah, it's still so funny. I was talking to Tom Verducci, who I have great admiration and respect for, and he said, no, you have to watch the special we're doing. Him and Bob Costas broke down game 7 on MLB Network, and I said, I think I'm good, Tom. He said, no, we broke down every single play. No, I watched it. Like, I saw what happened. I think I'm good. And I was talking to a couple of Toronto radio guys, and they said, you know, do you feel like it's your journalistic responsibility to rewatch the game? I go, no, I know what happened. Isaiah kind of Flapper should have taken a bigger lead. I'm like, I got it. I'm like, I understand. I understand Pops made the greatest catch in World Series history off the bat of Ernie Clement. When it was two outs, I said, I don't know why. I just said, if he hits it to the outfield, it's gone. And Sean Casey and I were talking about it. He goes, what do you mean? Like, it would have been two outs. I go, no, I don't mean sack fly. I just meant he'll hit it over their heads. I go, if he makes good contact to the outfield, this game's over. So once he made good contact, it's done. And then Paz makes the most ridiculous catch. Verducci tells the story. I don't know if he told this publicly. I'm sure he has. But he said, like, he was in the dugout, obviously, with his job with Fox. And he said Paz had the hoodie on and earbuds in. And he goes, he looked like a teenage kid sleeping in class. Like, he was like, half. I'm not kidding. He was like this. And then Doc was like, get in there. Like, what? Okay. And 5 minutes later, he makes the greatest catch ever. I said, Willie Mays, Vic Wertz, 1954. Tom goes, no, this catch is bigger. Mays game one, we've all seen the highlight, the black and white. Obviously, none of us were alive. He goes, but this saved the World Series. This is a bigger catch when you look at the momentum. And I asked Dave Roberts about it, Fish, when we were there at the winter meeting. So we had Doc on. I said, like, how did you know? And he goes, well, if you can believe it, I put him in because of his arm. He's not necessarily known for his glove. He goes, I thought I put Pies in because of his arm. Because I said, if there's a play at the plate, he'll gun him down. I did not think he'd be able to make that kind of a catch, which is just insane. So I have a buddy who's a Seahawks fan who's feeling pretty good now after they won. But even when they lost, he had really good perspective. I said, dude, just hand the ball off to Marshawn Lynch. And he said, yeah, but the guy made a hell of a play. I said, yeah, but you hand the ball off. He goes, but he made a hell of a play. Sometimes you just tip your cap. Like, Malcolm Butler made a hell of a play. Like, sometimes you just, you can do that. You don't have to crap on your team. So I've tried to adopt that approach. Like, rather than saying, why can't Connor Fluffin take a secondary lead and Carlos Fabelis should be tarred and feathered, the third base coach of the Blue Jays, I just go, hey, man, guy made a hell of a play. It happens. Right? Like, Yamamoto is unbelievable. Like, the guy pitched in game 6 and 7. Like, he was superhuman. Was Joel Sherman said to me in the New York Post, he goes, the Jays won that world. If it was a boxing fight, the Jays won the World Series 10-8. They lost it because of Yamamoto. I'm like, yeah. So that happens. Hopefully you get back. I think it's going to be a really competitive division. I'm highly amused. Hopefully you guys are not sponsored by BetMGM or DraftKings, one of these places. One of them has the Jays as second in the East. And I even want to text our buddy Booney. I'm like, second of the East. Jays beat the Yankees 8-5 season series and dusted you guys in the playoffs. Vlad was unbelievable. Like, single-handedly beat the Yankees. And the funniest soundbite of the year, John Schneider, manager, in the Yankee clubhouse after the Jays win with the bottle of champagne, start spreading the news, bitches. We're going to the World Series. I mean, that was unbelievable. For everyone who said they listened to Frank Sinatra, who I love, playing New York, New York, it was like, start spreading the news, bitches. We're going to the World Series. Like, that was great. So you try to think of the positive memories. I think the Jays are still the team to beat in the East. I know Boston's got better. I know Ranger Suarez, as you guys know, as Phillies fans, is an excellent pitcher. But they lost Bregman. I think Bregman was a big part of that team. Yankees, Rodon's not coming back till May 1st. Cole's not back till June 1st. You guys know when a guy comes back off Tommy John, sometimes takes him a year to really get back to who he is. So I don't think he's coming out throwing 97. Maybe I'm wrong. I think Bellinger, they had to re-sign. Other than that, the Yankees really didn't do much. And the Jays got Dylan Cease, who's highly durable, high strikeout rate. And one of my friends said to me, he's a bit of an overpay. I said, everyone's an overpay. You think Kyle Tucker's worth $60 million? Of course not. But Dylan Cease, for 7 years, 210, him, Gossman, Yasavage was a stud. I go, I like that Jay starting pitching. You do lose Bichette, who was terrific. I know Fish really wanted him on the Phillies. Would have liked him there with you guys. How do you think Dombrowski feels? He thinks they have the deal done. He's like, whatever it was, 7-2-10, whatever. I don't know what the numbers were. And that's like, Steve Cohen, rash and impetuous that they lost out on Bo. Just tell Stearns, get it done. All right, fine. $40 million a year. Opt-outs after years, 1-2 on a 3-year deal. Even Dombrowski's like, well, nothing I can do about that. I'm not going to give him that much money. So I'm looking forward to baseball season. It's that time of the year now, fellas, as you know. Mid-February, weather blows. Let's just get to baseball and have a great season. Hopefully for the Jays and Phillies, we can meet again in the Fall Classic.
Yeah.
Even if it's just watching the good weather while those guys warm up in Florida. I need it, man. I need it.
100%.
You mentioned your Jays, and we'll let you go after this one, Adnan. Thanks again for the time.
Of course.
You mentioned the Jays. I mean, that close to winning, and yes, they lost Bo Bichette, but they make huge moves. The biggest complaint in Philadelphia right now about the Phillies offseason is that they don't get that close, yeah, and minimal moves made outside of re-signing two of your own guys. There's the big run it back talk, and depending on who you ask, you know, Thompson made it a mathematical question instead of a general consensus question. So just what are your thoughts for the Phillies fans out there listening on the Phillies offseason and their outlook coming into this?
Again, I have no animus against them since we're not division foes, and I love the fan base, and I love the fact that when you guys went in 08, I was so happy because it felt like 1980 had been a while, and obviously before that had been a really long time. So I think it's frustrating because you go, I went to Phillies camp 2 years ago, and we had gone, the other round was, you went Red Sox first, and it wasn't great. And maybe I just didn't know, like, I was kind of maybe too deferential to PR. Like, you're supposed to just go grab the guys. Rafael Devers turned me down. I'll never forgive him, but it's fine. But then Twins couldn't have been nicer, because this is how fickle and sensitive media is. If you're nice to me, then I'll love you forever. So Byron Buxton couldn't have been nicer. Pablo Lopez couldn't have been nicer. Carlos Correa couldn't have been nicer. So I'm a Twins fan all the way. And the last up, next was Rays. We're pretty good. I think somebody snubbed us. I think it was Eflin. Your boy Eflin was kind of he snubbed us. All right, I'll never cheer for him again. And then went to the Phillies. And I see our buddy Jason Stark there. And I said, how have the Phillies been? He's like, hey, it's normally pretty good. We'll see how it goes. Could have been better. I'm Phillies all the way. Trey Turner, super nice guy. And I loved his answer. I asked him about, you know, when he was struggling so much. And then when the fans gave him that standing ovation, turned the season around. And he was like very humble about it. He wasn't like, it was a better answer. WBC. I said, you know, was it an issue because you played WBC? That's where you have a slow start. He goes, well, no. If I'd gone up to a great start, everyone would have said, well, it's because he already hit the ground running with WBC. And instead, if I slump, I can't use it as an excuse and say, well, I shot my wad, so to speak, with WBC. So, no, it was on me. I just stunk for a while, and then I got good. But, yeah, I'll never forget that moment. They all cheered for me, et cetera, et cetera. So, Trey was awesome. I love Zach Wheeler. We'll forever be a fan because at the end of the interview, he goes, hey, love watching you. Big fan. I go, well, I'm going to be voting for you for the Hall of Fame now. That's how easily my vote is held. Zach Wheeler gives me a compliment. And then Stark had said, like, good luck with Bryce. He can be hit and miss. And I was like, it couldn't have been nicer. And immediately I just started talking Flyers. So we said, he's like, oh, my son's getting bigger than the Flyers. I'm like, oh, great. So it was a solid 5-minute Flyer chit chat before we did the actual interview. And the funniest thing I asked him, and I wasn't sure how he'd react, but he reacted well. I said, earlier in your career, I'm not sure if everyone kind of liked you. Last, I go, you're kind of cocky, kind of aggressive and stuff. I said, but now, like, the best compliment I can pay you is, I think, like, even people who are not Phillies fans love Bryce Harper. Like, I don't know anyone who doesn't like Bryce Harper. Like, yeah, I just love the way you play, man, hair on fire, etc. And he kind of laughed. He's like, no, I've heard that before. I think, you know, when you're on the cover of Sports Illustrated 16 and you carry yourself a certain way, maybe I'm a little cocky. I don't, you know, just my style. But yeah, I appreciate maybe fans have come around, and more importantly, Phillies fans love me and appreciate me, and we'll go from there. So that was at the start of the year, and we know how the season went. Amused by Dombrowski calling him out. I think Dave is a very smart guy. I think he was like, what can I do here? Like, I'm trying to sign some guys here. They re-signed Schwarber, thank God. I should mention Schwarber, the nicest of the entire bunch. He almost like tackled us. He was so friendly and nice. He might have gone for lunch if we'd asked him. Like, Kyle, want to get lunch? Yeah, sure, whatever you want. Go ahead. So he's unbelievable. Thank God he re-signed. A guy you absolutely had to have. And Real Muto Fish and I have talked about. I know the offense has gone down, but defensively he's good. The pitchers all love him. Lauren Schott said that. All of your great pitchers love him. But I do think Dombrowski calling out Bryce, he was like, like, what can I do here? Like, he knows how to use the media. Dave's been around. He knew what he was doing when he said, like, yeah, we'll see if he can get back to being elite. He was not elite this year. And obviously Bryce was chapped and kind of, you know, threw something back at Dave. Like, I've done everything I can for this organization. You're going to take a shot at me. But stranger things have happened. Like, whatever it takes. I love Bryce Harper. I hope he can be that guy for you this season and beyond. Still love your starting pitching. I do think Zach getting hurt was a big blow. Like, I think even with Christopher Sanchez having an unbelievable season, you lose Suarez. But I do think that your starting pitching is still a strength of that team. You always have stars in Philly. Like, you always have your horses. It's almost like your depth pieces, can they step up? But it is frustrating that, like, the last, you know, going back to 08 now, like, you feel like you should have had one World Series somewhere in there, and it hasn't happened. And I'll never forget that series against San Diego. I'm like, oh, my God. When you're going back to the bank with that kind of a lead, to lose those two home games is nothing short of stunning. So I know how painful that must have been for you guys. But
Arizona, right?
Yeah, Arizona. Yeah, D-backs. Yeah, I was like, I couldn't believe it. And the great call by Brian Anderson, the answer backs, that was the nickname he had for them. Because being down 3-2, to lose those games, I think everyone and their mother thought Philadelphia was going to win that series and go back to the World Series.
Yep.
So I think they'll be a good team in the East. I think they'll contend. Intrigued by the Mets. Like, I don't know if I like it or I dislike it. I'm intrigued by it. Like, I love Alonso. That's 40 home runs, 100 RBIs gone. But McNeil, rumors were, not the best guy. Nimmo, not the best guy. Not to talk politics, but I think it was Mike Francesa said, there's a divide over Trump between Nimmo and Lindor. And they were laughing, going, white guy from Cheyenne, Wyoming, and a Puerto Rican guy. I wonder which side they're on.
Yeah, right.
Trump. So maybe it's a happier locker room. Now, I've heard from more than a few people saying, listen, their locker room was not good. But whether it was Trump or whatever it was, guys didn't necessarily get along. So I don't think that explains why Edwin Diaz is gone, because I'm assuming he's Puerto Rican. He'd be more on Lindor's side. So they're going to miss Edwin Diaz. That guy's a stud. But yeah, maybe a happier Mets team. I do think Peralta's a beast. I think he's a great pitcher. Yep. And I'm curious how Devin Williams does. So I think Phillies and Mets will be interesting, no doubt. And the Braves. I mean, the Braves are healthy. Yeah. They should get back to being that team. I mean, obviously Strider, again, a year after the injury, should be better. You look at Schwellenbach and Sale. Like, those are three really good starters. Their offense is really interesting, though. They kind of made their bed with their guys. And their guys are, like, good but not great. Like, Austin Riley's one of those guys. I watch him and I go, he's such a Brave. Meaning they gave him all this money and he's good. But, like, he's not all-star Austin Riley. And, like, they need their stars to go back to being a little bit better. They need a healthy Acuna. I love Matt Olson. He's going to have power, but he doesn't hit high for average. He's good defensively. So I do think it's a three-horse race. I'm curious how it unfolds in the NL East.
Yeah, I'd have to look at the numbers, but Austin Riley seems like a Hall of Famer against the Phillies. I have to look at it. He frightens me. But you know, that's stuff that can just get stuck in your head and you remember it incorrectly. Yeah. How I am, and it's not all numbers, but trying to put it in perspective now, and Kyle and I talked about it a little bit ago, we ran down each position and stuff and some of the moves. The Phillies right now, Fangraphs has projected WAR for the season based on the roster, and obviously things can change. The Phillies are seventh in combined projected WAR, which seems great, right? But two of the teams ahead of them are in their division. So I don't think this is this is two straight division titles, four straight playoff appearances. We talk about, it's kind of funny how this is a 96 win team. You mentioned star power and all this stuff. And at the end of the season, and I also wanted to, you mentioned how close that series was with the Dodgers. The Phillies actually outscored the Dodgers in that series and lost. And I'm not saying that means they deserve to win. And Kyle, you had a story from somebody talking about, you know, that was the only team that the Dodgers were really worried about. But I think we said it's crazy to have this team that's had four straight playoff appearances, increasing win totals, 96 wins right off the major league lead. And we felt like there were so many things they needed to improve. I don't want to say holes to fill, but so many spots to improve and the star power. But it still felt like after Turner, Schwarber and Harper at the top, it still felt like you get to the cleanup spot and this team is searching. And that feels like a weird place to be for a team that wins that many games.
Yeah, there's some polarizing players in that team too. Like with the Castellanoses, the fan base goes up and down. Alec Bohm can be an all-star, and then fans hate on him. Brandon Marsh, you're like, well, he's Brandon Marsh. What do you expect out of him? So you're right. It's interesting. I find like their depth guys are oft criticized. And like it depends on the day. At least fans either love him or like they love him. Like, oh my God, Castellanos is a guy. It's like, oh my God, this guy blows. We're going to run him out of town. So I do think it goes beyond their stars, no doubt about it.
And it seems like they're going to replace him. You mentioned Brandon Marsh. I got a stat for you. Yeah. I was looking up. I'm not impressed with the outfield makeup right now. I'm a little worried, especially from a spot that was a struggle for them last year.
Yeah.
And I was looking up to see where these – I was actually thinking more – looking negatively. I didn't think the numbers were going to be that good. Where do you think Brandon Marsh ranks in OPS in the major leagues? Not – don't worry about position. over the last three seasons, he's played in 400 games, averaging 130 games a season. Where do you think a guy like Brandon Marsh ranks in OPS in the major leagues?
OPS probably around 750, I'm going to say.
So where do you think he ranks?
Of all players or all center fielders?
All players.
All players? Okay, I'd say he's in he's mid-range. I think he's in the 50s.
30th.
Wow.
Brandon Marsh is 30th in the majors in OPS the last three seasons.
That's
and not in some kind of weird small sample size. He's played over 130 games a year.
Wow. That is stunning. That's my biggest takeaway from this entire interview. Brandon Marsh is 30th in OPS in the last 3 years.
I said the same thing, and it's made me like think about my my calibration of this outfield a little bit. I have to keep digging, but it made me take a pause.
That's funny. I like it. Marshy. He's a great guy, too.
Yeah.
Really great guy, for sure. I love the way that you phrase that, John, because I think for the argument that we'll constantly have with some of the more Negadelphian fans, they are very critical of the way that Thompson approaches his work with his bench and who plays when, and people are tired of platoons or whatever weird complaint they come up with that day. And to me, if this guy is playing that often and is that successful, but everybody kind of knows that he can't hit left-handers, that goes to show how good Rob Thompson is at putting his players in advantageous positions. We talked about how the team felt like they had a lot of holes and they still won 96 games. When you do stuff like having him in there and making sure that Edmundo Sosa, when he's slugging 900 against lefties, is getting every opportunity to play against them, that just goes to show how good Thompson is. And a lot of people, I think, choose to not look at it that way because they're just frustrated with the team.
Yeah, I love Topper, and it's a good point, Kyle. Again, fellow Canadian, starting in Ontario, part of the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame. When I interviewed him, I said, "Yeah, you got inducted, whatever." He said, "When did you get inducted?" I go, "I'm not the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame." He said, "You should be. How many Canadians are in baseball? How are you not in the Hall of Fame?" So Topper's a great guy, and you're right. Great personality, very mellow, very chill. I was worried after they got bounced last year. I heard some rumors that he could be in trouble, but thank God he's still there. I think it's a lot harder than people realize to manage all those different personalities. I think the guys respect him, they like him, and he's done a good job there.
All right, Adnan. Well, it feels like baseball season, even though there's snow all over the place. Super Bowl's over. It actually is surprisingly warmer.
Up to the 30s today, yeah.
Yeah, it didn't feel crazy frigid when we took the kids to school this morning. So this is great hockey talk, great baseball talk. We can't thank you enough for coming on and doing this with us.
Of course, Fish. Let's get together soon. By the way, Kyle, how about your brother showing up at winter meetings? It was fabulous. You know, at winter meetings, you think I want to hang out with Ron Darling or Sean Kidd? No way. I want to hang out with John Fisher. Yeah. Fish was there. We got to hang out. It was great. We had a nice little walking tour I did in my suit.
Yeah, Adnan called an audible. We were going to go get lunch. I was like, oh, this menu looks great. He says, how about we get some steps in? 45 minutes later, walk around the Orlando sun. I got a pullover on. He's wearing a suit. I was like, I don't think we thought this through.
It was a great walk and talk. We definitely got our steps in. And thank you for buying the book. And Kyle, I have to mention, Bella Twins, the wrestling, of course, time. They're back together. And Cooper DeGene, apparently with Nikki Bella. So there's fly, Eagles, fly. My man's living the good life right now. What wins the Super Bowl? Pick six that will be unforgettable, makes the Pro Bowl this year, and now he probably had like Nikki Bella's poster growing up as a kid, and now
for sure.
And now he's dating her. It's unbelievable. What a life.
Pretty nuts. It's funny that when Raw was in Philly recently, the fans chanted Coop at Nikki, and this is how out of practice she is. She thought they were booing and immediately flipped into heel mode. Brie had to save her, and like, I think they're chanting Coop, and she's like, okay.
Oh, that's
had to put
classic.
On the smile again. It was great, but that's the pro she is. She's been in the business so long. She heard what she thought was booze and was like, cool, I'm going to heel off on the whole crowd.
That's great. No, I saw the clip where she said something about, oh, Pro Bowl, not bad. Huh? I can pick him. I'm like, oh, my God, it's getting out there now. It's great.
A couple seconds before that, she was like, oh, what are you guys upset because the Eagles aren't in the Super Bowl?
Oh, that's
Brie was like, wait a second.
We're always ready to turn heel. It's great. I'll send you the chapter. I'll get your email from Fitch. I'll send you my chapter, my WWE experience. You'll love it.
Okay. Yeah, please.
Well, all right. Thanks again. Enjoy the little bit of a break from hockey work. I'm sure you got a little bit, so enjoy that. And we're excited for baseball season and can't wait to catch up with you soon.
Awesome. Thanks so much, boys. I'll come back anytime. Brotherly love. Let's get it.
Thanks again, sir. Appreciate you.
All right, boys. Take care.
Oh, nice. The great Adnan Virk. Can't get much better than that, Johnny. I mean, not only do we love the guy, and I've watched him for years on TV, and I know that you've told stories about him, how much of a compliment is that? A guy who's unemployed or partially employed, going down to the winter meetings, and Mr. Adnan Virk says the only guy I want to hang out with is Johnny Fish. That's got to feel pretty good, man.
He's always been good to me. He's you get to work with some really cool people and get to come you get to meet a lot of people doing what we do. But Adnan's a true friend and not just a, you know, a work colleague. And yeah, we I was down there just trying to meet whoever I could meet, and he said, "Yeah, let's meet up tomorrow. I got plenty of stuff going on, but I'll make 45 minutes." And legitimately, he said, "Hey, how about instead of lunch? I don't think I'm hungry. Let's take a walk." And two numbskulls walking around in a suit and a sweater out in the Orlando sun.
Yeah, I'm out in Florida, muggy weather. Just.
But it was, I mean, I wasn't going to get steps in otherwise, so it ended up working out.
Well, good for you guys. Good for you guys. Johnny, I know we talked with Adnan at the top about the Super Bowl. We kind of hinted at the fact that it is a, it was a stinker. Any thoughts on the Super Bowl or any reaction? I know that when we watched the Niners get blown out by the Seahawks, your first reaction was, well, the Eagles could have done that. Like, they could have put up that kind of game. Any prevailing thoughts after watching the game? I mean, I know that when the first nine possessions, there's seven punts and two field goals, there's not going to be a whole lot of excitement to talk about, but anything?
No, unfortunately, I made a joke with a bunch of three and outs. It felt like watching the Eagles. So there was a little bit of, oh, cool, we could have been here. But no, I think it played out the way I thought it would. I think the Patriots were early in their timeline. Vrabel and May are great pieces. I think they're going to be a threat for a long time with those guys around. And to give it more time to build that roster, you know, you make some quick things when you come in and change coaches. And Vrabel got some of the right guys to help with his system. And you could tell how guys were talking about him. They're going to be a problem. And it sucks to see the Patriots potentially back to being such a threat for so long. But the Seahawks were awesome, and I feel great for Sam Darnold. And I think that game played out exactly the way it was supposed to.
Yeah, I felt really, really good for Sam Darnold. You know, everything that he's been through, labeled a bust, all of a sudden he comes back and a key contributor to the team. You can say whatever you want about how good the system and the team were around him. You know, not everybody's going to be able to rise to the occasion, and to see him do it after the way he's been kind of treated over the years. I mean, the guy's won 14 games 2 years in a row. I don't care how good your coach and the rest of your team is. That's not easy to do. So exciting for him. I actually watched the game with Dad last night, and it was pretty boring, all things considered. But he made a point. He was like, you know, late in the game, fourth quarter, they still felt like, because Seattle couldn't do what they wanted, it still felt like they had a chance. And even though, like, I know that the fumble was a much bigger play, but that interception late, even though they don't get points out of it immediate, you know, there was still plenty of time left in the game. And Dad kind of felt like that was the end of the game, not necessarily the scoring play about halfway through the quarter, only, you know, 2 minutes in or so when they picked the ball off. You know, they were still marching at that time. And I think that any confidence that team had left just evaporated as soon as that ball ended up in the other team's hands.
So. I thought it was not over for a long time. When the Patriots finally scored, I texted my brother-in-law, who's a Patriots season ticket holder. So they were jacked up for this. I texted him and said, here we go, because there was enough time for, they were going to have two more possessions and it was like a 12-point game. So it doesn't mean they're going to score. You know, you don't want to assume that for a team that just scored for the first time. But if you're figuring some things out and you get a boost of confidence from scoring and the offense is humming, you know, that's a really, really good defense. But all you want to be in it. You want to have a chance. And I'm not saying I thought it was going to happen, but when you're sitting there with whatever it was, 8 minutes left, you're probably going to get two more possessions. If you're able to score, then this is a game. So it was, I was glad that it was like that, because it was, people talk about it being boring. And if all you need is, you know, 40 points and all that stuff to enjoy a game, I still thought the game was, good and really well played. It played out the way it should have, but you know, the Patriots, I think they're going to be a problem.
Yeah, the one thing I liked watching the game, and when I finally got a chance, we had a little trouble with bedtime with the toddler, but once I was able to really listen to the announcers, they made sure to stress, and accurately so, with evidence, that like this, it might seem boring because it's low scoring, but these defenses are playing out of their minds. And like, if you like defensive football, you should pay attention the rest of the way, because it has been a masterclass on both sides. From both of these defensive coordinators and both of the leaderships, the defensive leaderships on both teams. So even again, Seattle ends up putting up 29, but Sam Darnold was part of his success this year was making very simple, quicker decisions. And even he was rushed at times. He was missing some wide open receivers because he was rushed. May, who has been a completion monster all season, his high completion percentage all year, has been a talking point for both people who support the Patriots and detractors. And he was, I mean, they were all over him, obviously. Seven sacks in the game is nothing to sneeze at, but it wasn't just the times that they got to him. It was all game long. That guy couldn't get comfortable, and the result shows exactly how the game felt if you watched it all.
Yep.
Oh, man. Johnny, anything on the Flyers based on what Adnan told us? I mean, I know that there was a lot, but I think he covered it all, man. They have some good building blocks, but this was a team that kind of probably, similar to what Haley told us last week, a team that probably played a little bit above their head in the early going, getting some fans excited, but is kind of where we expected them to be. Shouts to Adnan again for coming on. Thanks for the time. Anything else on hockey?
No, I'm not going to try to add to what he said. He knows hockey. It's his second favorite sport. Baseball is his favorite sport, and that's what we connected over and the shared love of the – I mean, we've got baseball, Flyers, Eagles, so there was a natural – even though he's a huge movie buff and I've probably seen 12 movies in my life, we still have that. That's why we're friends and not just old work colleagues. There's a lot in common. But he knows his stuff. There's nothing for me to add to all the stuff he said. It gives me something. It gives me a baseline to, you know, as I'm watching the rest of the season, to know a little bit more about what I'm seeing.
Agreed. I have to get the book. It's on my list of books to order. I got to finish this one first. AI's memoir. I got to finish that one up. But Cinephile's on my list. Excuse me. I listened to his pod that he used to do, Adnan's pod that he used to do with, or I guess his appearance on the Levitard show. And he would always talk movies instead of coming in and talking sports. And really, he's explained his history and why he was so connected to movies his whole life. So make sure you go look that stuff up. But more importantly, go get the book. It's not a guy who had fame elsewhere and just decided like, oh, I like movies, I could write a book, right? Like, no, this guy really studies the craft and knows so much. You know, if you think that he just gave you a ton of information on this pod about hockey and about baseball, he can do the same with movies, directors and styles and all kinds of stuff. So definitely looking forward to the read myself.
It's a true passion. He used to host a podcast called Cinephile. He did a ton of episodes. He doesn't do it anymore, but if you want to go out and listen to his takes on movies, and got some really cool guests to talk about them. And he's very curious, great interviewer. So if you like that podcast, you can go find that. And it was really good. And I know he did at least once, he did an alternative. He hosted an alternative Oscars show. Like, obviously,
oh, that's right. You know, yeah. I forgot about that
stage, but something streaming somewhere with, I think, Ben Lyons. And I believe whether it was the one, he definitely did this. I don't know if it was the only time he did it, but he was there. He was hosting the show the year that they announced the wrong Best Picture winner.
That's right. That's what, yes.
So, yeah, he's been, it's a true passion, and he's really, obviously, really knows his stuff. He and I, one time at the Little League World Series, we went out during the day and went to see Ant-Man, and he couldn't believe like whatever the last movie I had seen or how long it had been. And it was just so funny. But that's what he does. He's like, I'm finding something to watch, especially when I'm, you know, if I'm on a work trip and don't have to do pickups and drop offs and things. If I've got a little bit of time, yeah, you hit the gym, you make sure you get lunch, you study and do, you know, do your work. But like, I'm going to go get a movie in. And yeah, I was like, hey, I haven't seen a movie in years. I'll go. So that was one of the last movies I've seen in the theater was Ant-Man with him.
Do you know what the last one was before that?
I remember seeing Spotlight in Connecticut. But I mean, I'm talking about before, when I still worked. These are both when I still worked at ESPN. I went to see a movie with Molly in New York. We saw A Star Is Born. Oh, but I bet that's the only movie I've seen in the theater in the last 8 years. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Spotlight.
Yep.
My goodness.
we're talking about, to wrap it up with Adnan, one of my favorite things about him is, and I'm sure you heard it, I reminded myself to keep track of all of his name drops, and he made 24 name drops.
I was going to ask you off air about that. It was awesome.
Well, look, I feel, I'm going to thank him. I feel honored, and we should feel honored that he didn't treat us any differently than his other podcast appearances. He was firing, and it was great because it's a mix of obviously really well-known people. He started with Aaron Boone. You know, he hit Tim Kirkshin and Jason Stark and people like athletes like Trey Turner, Bryce Harper, Kyle Schwarber, people like Malcolm Gladwell and Bill Simmons. Then he also hit people we used to work with, like Greg Colley and Tom Roach, producers at ESPN, and Tom's now at CBS. So yeah, I think the most impressive thing is the range that he, I mean, he also, I'm looking at the list, Bob Costas. I mean, he really, some real heavy hitters he drops, and then some, hey, just the guy, you know, guy we used to work with, and people, very few people would know. So I appreciate that he gave us just as many of those, 24 on this podcast.
Yeah, dude, and he dropped your name. I mean, again, he had to clarify for the fans listening right away. Hey, I'm going to say Fish a lot. I mean, Johnny.
Yeah.
Like, that goes to show how well-connected he feels to you. So that's yeah. Awesome, and thanks again to him. The one thing you asked him early about how he became a Flyers fan. See, I didn't know that, and I love that story.
Yeah.
And I don't know how close he and his brother are in age. I don't know if you happen
Three
to know.
Years.
Okay, so I think it makes a little more sense when you're that close in age.
Yeah.
With us being 9 years apart, I just wanted to do everything that you did. Yeah. So if you weren't a Phillies fan, if you were a fan of another team, I probably would have been a fan of that team too, despite where we live. Like,
yeah.
I mean, just for people at home, real quick, I played baseball even though I didn't like it when I was really young because Johnny played baseball and we traveled to all of his tournaments. I wanted to play baseball just because of that. You played music. Johnny played the trombone in grade school band. And I asked my mom the day that we were allowed to pick instruments, which one does Johnny play again? And she said the trumpet by mistake. I played the trumpet for 20 years because I thought that it was the trombone on day one. And they didn't have any trombones when I got home and realized it was a different instrument. So like anything that you wanted to do, I wanted to do. I played peewee football because you played a year of high school football. Anything that you did. I mean, the first time I did something different was like running cross country. And you were like, you're insane. I can't believe you would run that. Would do that to themselves. So it's funny to hear different siblings' perspectives on things. Like, still a really close, tight relationship, but they were so close in age that they wanted to bump up against each other. You and I being eldest and youngest and, you know, almost a full decade apart, it was easy to see why I would just kind of want to follow in your footsteps on everything.
Yep.
I love that perspective that he gave. Cause you know, we talked about in the spirit of brotherly love and brotherly glove. It's funny to hear how different those intense sibling relationships can be.
Yep.
Love that perspective. Love having Adnan on. Love talking with you, Johnny. Always love talking with you. Luckily, I had some internet issues where this was going to be a solo Johnny pod interviewing Adnan, and I luckily we solved it right as everything was about to kick off. So just appreciate you, Johnny. Any last words on the way out before we hang up and then schedule the next episode?
It's baseball season.
It's finally baseball season. Football comes to a close. Spring training right around the corner. We have pitchers and catchers, I think, for some clubs reporting this week. So should be an exciting time. We'll have plenty of Phillies preseason and camp talk. We will talk WBC at some point. Should be an exciting time. A lot of Phillies representatives, I think they have the second or third most reps in the league playing in the WBC with 15 players announced. So should be a good one. If you haven't done so already, make sure you give us a follow. Johnny and I have our handles here. If you're listening on audio, Johnny at Johnny Fisher with a PH for the Fisher, myself at Kyle Fisher 4-5. It's another great edition of the Brotherly Glove podcast. Can't complain. Love getting together. Love spending time with all of you and appreciate that you make time for us in your lives. We will be back soon with another episode. Appreciate you guys, and we will see you in the next one.